Dear audience, welcome to the Conscious Wellness Show. I am Raymond Morris, your host. On today's show, we have an important guest, John Cowie. Realization explores the idea that mankind has been manipulated by a group of elites. His website, if you wish to look at it during the interview, is silburydawning.com. That's S-I-L-B-U-R-Y, dawning.com. Mr. Cowie is an author and a researcher. He is a veteran of the semiconductor revolution as a former senior executive of the Intel Corporation. His original intention was to write a book based on the characters he met in his first-hand experience during his many years in this exciting young industry. But as he watched the remarkable evolution of the silicon chip, and in turn the computer and telecommunication industries, he began to link these extraordinary envisioning achievements with the human brain. Regular journeys past the ancient sites of Silbury Hill and the standing stones of Avebury prompted him to consider where our knowledge could have come from, and the seed of the alien visitor gene theory began. Over the past 20 years, John has promoted his theory in his book, Silbury Dawning, The Alien Visitor Gene Theory, in numerous articles, radio interviews, videos, and lectures, including Glastonbury Symposium, and gained incredible feedback to suggest the possibility is worthy of serious investigation. John, welcome to the Conscious Wellness Show.
Thank you very much, Raymond. I'm really looking forward to an open-minded interview on realization, where I hope to prevent speculation becoming fact.
Excellent. So what is it that you would like to share with us? We're open to whatever theory you would like to share.
Yes, well, if I can maybe get into my first PowerPoint slide, if I...
Sure. Go ahead.
Yes, basically, what is important, I want people to realize, is that we have not evolved slowly from Homo sapiens, as per Darwin, as the traditional establishment obviously believe. Archaeologists and paleontologists suggest that we move slowly from Homo sapiens and progress along this very slow progress towards where we are today. But I believe that we share 98.4% of our genetic material with a chimpanzee, and I don't think we'd be much further ahead of them had we not. Something else had happened within our histories. And when you start to look very closely at humans, we've always been very clever. We're very clever, and we've always been clever since the beginning of our recorded history. So it seems that we already have knowledge contained within our memory. It's almost as though we have inherited this knowledge going way back in time, and it's progressed through our generations, probably about 500 generations, through a transgenerational memory gene. And I believe this information is embedded in our unconscious memory.
If I may just add, I think there's also a lot of missing links in the evolutionary the bones and corpses of these our ancestors that they found. There are some big jumps in the progression that are unexplained and numerous.
That's right. And it just seems to be that we've inherited this knowledge. It was come with us through the generations, and it's basically a knowledge which is stored, as I said, in our operating system. To use the computer analogy, so somewhere deep within our operating system, within the kernels and within the firewalls and so on, sits this amazing knowledge which is passed down through the generations. And it's quite clear that we seem to have gained this knowledge from somewhere. And so the key question here, again, in terms of realizing what's happened, where did our knowledge come from? And again, studying over many years, you start to think, well, they're looking for evidence. They seem to point to, there's quite a great deal of evidence that I've basically highlighted in my book, Silvery Dawning, which suggests that extraterrestrials arrived on our planet about 13,000 years ago. And it seems that they experimented with various species on the planet. And in fact, Greek mythology shows they probably experimented with hundreds of different species. One of the key areas was the Homo sapien. And so it appears that they managed to create this experiment, if you like, to convert or to allow this the Homo sapien to become part of their genetic material. So we ended up with from Homo sapien to basically the first humans. And it seems to be quite clear that for example, Professor Stephen Oppenheimer from Oxford University suggests, as I suggest, that our population started from a single point and prevented any competition. We were actually basically just one very big close family. So we started from this kind of Eve point, and we very quickly multiplied. And again, as per Darwin's theory, the Homo sapien with the extraterrestrial gene becomes successful and replaced the Homo sapiens stroke Neanderthal race that was around at the time. And this is how this culture began to develop, say about 13,000 years ago.
Do you think, do you have an idea which particular alien races have been involved in our genetic manipulation?
No, it's very difficult to predict. The only things you find from ancient tablets is stone tablets is that it could have been a range of different species. We find some winged creatures that appear, and obviously on maybe Earth's gravity, they wouldn't survive. So that would be something that would disappear. But yeah, it's clearly there must be some kind of similarity in terms of their structure. Again, in my book, I mentioned things like slimy lips and different areas that are quite different to Homo sapiens that seem to have been added to the human structure, obviously the way we walk, and etc. So there have been some significant changes occurred with this particular fact that, speculation, I must say, that the development was probably quite rapid. And again, as we the Homo sapien develops into human, this knowledge is transferred, as I mentioned, in this memory gene. And this is knowledge of the extraterrestrial going way back into their particular their life, their universe. So we actually are holding in our memory, within each and every one of us, an amazing amount of knowledge, which we are slowly recovering. Each generation is slowly recovering. So if you look back into time, many thousands of years, we can see, again, very clever people, always been clever. We look back to people like Pythagoras or Galileo or Leonardo da Vinci, and now you're moving up a little bit further up, which is Socrates and the Buddha and Confucius, who believed in a utopian society that was built on love and kindness, that was a bit that was developing back about 13,000 years ago.
Some of our guests might think that you've become good friends with some of these UFOs since you're doing this interview from what looks like in front of a bay window of a spacecraft, since we see the Earth below the atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, the UFO is very interesting, and something I'll touch on later, because obviously they've been seen over the centuries and more recent times, where they've been seen, the media have branded those who've seen them as crackpots, and the military, obviously, with their pilots, they've basically threatened with losing their job if they stick to the story that they've seen UFOs. But this is changing. We're beginning to find military becoming a little bit more open about it, as is media now beginning to report different sightings. And from my experience, I have to confess, I haven't seen a UFO, but I've met many people who have, and the description of them are very similar. You're kind of traditional flying saucer type shape. And so where are they coming from? And again, that's something I'll touch on a little bit later on in the in the interview.
Do you think that we actually had direct interaction with them, or was more subliminal or unconscious interaction in the past?
I don't. As I said, I think they basically landed on Earth 13,000 years ago, and one of the key areas is that they genetically manipulated the species of the Homo sapiens species on Earth, which I think was fundamental to their success on Earth. I think as well, when they arrived, I don't think they needed to do a great deal of terraforming in terms of changing. Obviously, the planet Earth was teeming with life, but I think that pyramids were significant in the development of the planet. And I'll touch on that subject in a moment. We say we're finding pyramids. My research discovered pyramids on every continent on Earth, underneath the oceans, and you find lots of commonality with pyramids. For example, all pyramids have water flowing beneath. It's one of the amazing mysteries of the Great Pyramid, which obviously the archaeologists and Egyptologists suggest that they were built for tombs of pharaohs. If you look closely at them, if you get down into the subterranean chamber, there's a clear evidence of water or wells beneath the Great Pyramid. So that, to me, this suggests that the pyramid is more to do with life and birth and life than death and afterlife. And you look at the construction of the pyramid, it's just so amazingly complex. And just like to maybe touch a little bit on a pyramid in a moment, just to see how important the pyramids are in terms of looking at some of the evidence that may point to the fact that E.T. landed on our planet 13,000 years ago and created this amazing civilization.
Go ahead. You wanted to show us a little experiment? Did you want to do that now?
Yeah, while I'm kind of looking at the experiment, it's just on the screen, some information that a presentation I gave back at the Glastonbury Conference in 2013, specifically about Silver Hill or White Pyramid, but it goes into the pyramids, and there's a YouTube thing, it's about an hour-long presentation. So this, what I'm basically showing here is a very short demonstration, but it just gives you an idea just how amazing pyramids are. Just bear with me one second.
Go right ahead. You'll have to switch off your background.
Yes, I can look at that and just quickly give you an example of. Just bear with one second. But as I said, on the screen you can see some information about the particular
video that you've done here.
Yes,
John has his own channel on YouTube. There we'll find a bunch of different videos.
So if I then just quickly hopefully get
there, we go, that's it. You got it.
Can you come in there? Yeah. Here was a suspended pyramid, and basically I'm 70% water. And let me just try and hold it strip for a second. If I rub my hands together and point it at the pyramid, Just take a few moments. I hope. Start to see the pyramid rotate.
Does it always rotate in the same clockwise or counterclockwise position?
It does vary, and there's a lot of different reasons that are given for that. And for the moment, we can just.
Yep, starting to go in the other direction now.
Seeing the suspended pyramid begin to rotate. Normally, it's again with a live show, it's a bit slower, but normally it does actually move around quite quickly. Maybe it's, but I think you should begin to see it hopefully rotating.
Yeah, I think we clearly saw that.
Is that you're okay with that?
Yep, that's good.
Okay.
I'm just going to share a screen while you put your computer back in place there. I'm going to share your book cover. Here we've got John's book cover and some of the chapters of the book. From Dawning to the Big Picture, the Birth of Human Race, Civilization, the Unexplained Phenomena, etc. And you can read the first five chapters here on his website under the introduction, early chapters. So I'll stop sharing that. Okay, you're back on.
I'm just, so if I look at this, this next slide, as I mentioned, I'm basically 70% water. So if I look at the, I'll just leave it for a moment for the viewer to have a look. Atoms are neutral, they have no charge, but it's so easy to disturb an atom through friction, through temperature, through light, etc., etc. So the atom is neutral. Once you disturb the electron in the outer side, then, for example, the hydrogen atom, if you look at the electron here, it disappears, it's lost electron, and it becomes a positive ion, which is known as a cation. Alternatively, if you look at the oxygen atom, they gain electrons, so they become a negative charged ion, known as an anion. So what we have is the sun is a positive charged body and the earth is negative. So the anions move towards the sun and the cations move towards earth. So you have this flow of ionic current throughout the universe. So this particular flow. As we saw with the pyramid, once you put the pyramid on the ground, this ionic flow moves through the pyramid. This is why we're seeing it rotate. Well, it's rotating. Obviously, when it's on the ground, it's fixed. So this energy is moving through this flow is moving through the pyramid. Now, the pyramid is able to store this energy, electrostatic energy, and you find as you go towards the tip of the pyramid, voltage increases quite rapidly, huge amount of voltage at the top of the pyramid. In all pyramids, there are what are called transducers. They're either granite block or granite cap or sarsen stone cap. And what this does is it converts this electrical energy into a huge magnetic field, which can surround the pyramid. Also, what the pyramid can do with this energy is convert the atmosphere beneath the magnetic field, a bit like a biosphere you get in air conditioning systems. But it's been shown, and birds have shown, any plants, vegetables grown within this umbrella, the yields are fantastic. And it's just so massively fertile within this area. The other significant thing that we've found is that Russian and American scientists have found seismic signals emanating from the tip of each pyramid. So all the pyramids in Cairo have been measured, and every pyramid has its own unique seismic signal. What that means is pyramid basically is a transmitting and receiving device. Intriguingly, back on the theme I have, we're copying information or recovering information from our extraterrestrial ancestor. A few years back, there was a conference in Brussels where scientists were looking at building what we call a doomsday ark on the moon, where they would build a construction which would sit on top of water discovered on the moon. And this would actually be a pyramid shape. It would store hard disk drives with all the information to basically restart a civilization, farming methods, etc., in the case of some kind of catastrophe happening on some nuclear problem. The device also would have a transmitting receiving device. So basically, we're kind of going back and looking again at copying a very similar thing on the moon, which had already been built by E.T. back in 13,000 years ago.
We've seen images on YouTube and other places of a pyramid. I'm trying to think, was it Mars or was it the moon that they had pictures of a pyramid?
The picture of a pyramid on Mars, yes. It's just quite incredible that we were finding that the pyramid is basically an energy generating device with all sorts of other areas that we just don't know yet. We just have no idea. I mean, what it does indicate that whoever was on the planet 13,000 years ago had immense knowledge. And as I say, we're basically slowly kind of recovering that particular information.
Can you share what is found at Silbury? Because I haven't heard that much about it. Of course, Stonehenge is a popular site and some others, but Silbury might be a little bit less well known. So could you share with us what archaeological findings have been discovered there?
Fundamentally, the traditional view or English heritage view of Silbury Hill is the largest man-made mound in Europe. If you start to look closely at it, as I did when they had the conservation restoration project back, I think, about 2008, I got involved and I got to the centre of Silver Hill because they had tunnels that they dug over the years and so on. But it became clear that, you know, without getting too much detail here, again, it's mentioned in that Glastonbury presentation, it became clear that Silver Hill was actually originally built as a pyramid. And when I go and visit, say, round about the Giza Plateau and different areas of the world which have become more arid, you begin to realize that obviously Silver Hill and that particular climate has obviously been weathered and of course a big grass bank has appeared over it. But when you study it more closely, it basically it was a pyramid. And again, water flowing beneath. And
how old would you say that site is?
Again, this is the intriguing thing about the date. If you just take one step forward, about 10,500 years ago, there was a massive disruption to the planet. It's known as youngest driest global event, and this is something which the extraterrestrials maybe saw coming, but they couldn't do anything about it. So basically, they started to store the information in the pyramids. And in fact, you do realize that Noah's Ark is a mistranslation. It wasn't an ark, wasn't a boat. When the reckoning was a mistranslation, it was actually the ark was this pyramid. So they started to store information in that particular pyramid. So anyway, this catastrophic event occurred. It moved the equator. It still can detect a wobble on the planet at the poles. And so the climate probably around about Egypt at that time was very much like a Californian type climate. But of course, with that particular catastrophe, we found that the obviously climate changed and things evolved over the next from 10,500 years ago, when we first started looking at Egyptian history 7,000 years ago, you're finding a different climate and you're finding a civilization very much in decline. So, Raymond, to come back to answer your question, you're finding that they started to date Silver Hill and Stonehenge
some people would say post-diluvian or pre-diluvian.
Yeah, it's like the word now. It's just a Pleistocene. Your viewers, I'll come back to that in a moment. But fundamentally, you're finding that this catastrophic event that occurred again reduced the culture around Egypt. Start to see that in decline, but also at the same time, 4,500 years ago, you find that Stonehenge is in that particular area, we call it the Wessex Complex in England, is going back to the Stone Age. So we're finding this massive disruption that's occurred. And intriguingly, they dated the Stonehenge 4,500 years ago. But if you look closely, there's no evidence of a population there or knowledge to have constructed such an amazing structure. And again, they link the same date, 4,500 years ago, to the building of the pyramids. And again, these are just dates that are just so basically fictitious, or again speculation that's done by archaeologists and Egyptologists, which over time become fact. But if you look closely at what's been going on, again, from my research, it's both Stonehenge and the pyramids look like they've been built more like 13,000 years ago. And if you come back to Silbury Hill, again, you look at how that's evolved, that's kind of eroded and so on. And again, we need to get maybe to some sort of computer science to see how things reduce and wear and tear. But and again, I think our knowledge will evolve for us to work out how these things have actually eroded over time and get a more accurate date. But the view of establishment view that these places, Stonehenge, Silbury Hill, the pyramids were built 4,500 years ago, I think is completely inaccurate.
Anything more than 6,000 years ago is unconsidered.
That's right. Yeah, you find history is almost starting. But if you look closely, you're just finding that it's an area in it's in decline. And again, coming to the main theme of realization, what we're talking about elites, this is where I believe they stepped in terms of they could see opportunity. Obviously, imagine a similar thing happening in our civilization, a major disruption. Some people would step forward to basically try and control and exert power over the rest of the population. And this is basically what elites did back at that particular time when we had this major catastrophe.
Is there any stone carvings or pictorials anywhere in Silbury?
No, this is the interesting thing. Again, it's like a general trend is that since the kind of disruption or the move by the elites, obviously there were other groups involved, I think Knights Templar, Druids and Freemasons and all sorts of other groups at the time. But over the years, these groups are now more symbolic, but the elites have managed to hold on to their power and the control over the rest of us. And the key thing that they did was they basically hid the information, the knowledge, or they destroyed it that we have in fact evolved from this extraterrestrial civilization.
Right, they invented their own version of history that suited their agenda.
Exactly. And what in fact they also did was they produced two races. They produced the human race, which is basically left just to evolve. But what they managed to do was produce boundaries and also introduce life after death idea. And of course, both situations created conflict and created opportunities for enemies. And this, we've seen conflict and wars and so on going on all the way through, even up to today, if you go into the so-called cradle of civilization around between the Euphrates and the Tigris, you know, you're talking about Iraq, Iran, Syria, they're still destroying their ancient information. Well, what I think that the elites haven't really recognized is that we have all gained this amazing knowledge. And because the race they produced, developed, was part of the human race, is the Jewish race. And the Jewish race was, again, they still had this knowledge hidden from them, but they were kept more pure race through different means of maintaining their sort of uniqueness, so they have no borders, but they have religion again. And of course, the elites were very clever. They labeled them the chosen people, so that gave them, you know, that made life quite difficult for them.
But I think do you think they were genetically modified differently than the rest of the human race?
I think they've tried to keep it as purer to the original race, the ET. Homo sapiens side of it. So I think they're trying to keep that a much purer. And I think the reason for doing this is so that they can recruit elites that obviously wants to need to replenish them in a kind of Dalai Lama type way. So elites are still very separate from the Jewish race, but they basically using this kind of purified, you know, their culture. You study the Jewish culture, it's quite incredible the information they have, but it's just stopped short, even goes back as far as Noah and other people who probably could have been ET, but it hides the fact that it doesn't explain or completely hides the fact that these guys were probably from extraterrestrial origin.
Well, Enoch, if you're familiar with the Book of Enoch, which of course makes reference to beings that are, from today's point of view, pretty much extraterrestrials.
Yeah. So what happened with the Jewish race, they gained, obviously, haven't touched on how the elites have manipulated and controlled this over the centuries, but we began to realize in recent times, they use Project Fear, Project Greed, Project Smear, and so on. Fake news, and we're seeing all this coming out mainly through their establishment, the puppet establishment. But coming back to the Jewish race side, where they have been rewarded is like the Project Greed. So they are rewarded in terms of this idea of keeping themselves through circumcision and so on, keeping themselves pure race to provide these the next generation of elites. But so you find that the Jews are at the top table in terms of finance, law and order, media, politics, and so on. So they've been, I feel like, given this these amazing opportunities, where they basically control the rest of us, but via the elites. So it's elites are actually there maintaining this hold, if you like, on society. And again, they produce, the elites have produced things like money, and they produce all sorts of debt and so on, which is a completely unnecessary, because you know, it's something that, again, we come back kind of conscious wellness side of your debate and your program, where we need to look at, this is pointless debt. I remember after the First and Second World War, I mean, the First World War, I just came from nowhere. Again, I was just getting manipulated by the elites. And the Second World War, again, that comes as a bit of a surprise. I think the elites were a bit surprised that Hitler came on the go. And of course, it was a massive shock when he he started to upset the apple cart by thinking, right, well, replace the Jewish race with their own master race. And of course, that was not something that would appeal to the elites. And we can see how powerful they are. Because if you look back at the newsreels and so on of Hitler and Hitler's Germany, you think, well, how could he be defeated? But he was, and this is because of the amazing power of the elites in terms of their wealth and so on. And so,
and convincing all these nations to get involved too.
Yeah, yeah, and so this just quite incredible, really, the power they have. Yeah, and as I said, they're still exerting it. They've exerted it through the centuries, and again, be highlighted recent times as we find where they don't like things. Say, in our case, in the UK, Brexit, or in your case, not too keen on President Trump. They find all sorts of Project Fear, Project Greed, projects, you know, so on, and manipulating this public establishment to get rid of things that they don't want. And obviously, the only reason that Trump survived is basically because of Twitter. He's actually able to go back. And where he's been smeared or discredited or whatever, he has an opportunity to actually fight back. So that's quite an intriguing situation which has occurred. What it has done, I believe, has exposed the elite tactics that they've used over the many centuries to keep power control over us.
Do the elites have an Achilles heel?
Well, I think they do, in that they've destroyed everything. They're trying to destroy all the information, all the knowledge to highlight that easy was here. One of the things that may help us, again, in part of my research, is that with ground penetrating radar equipment, as it starts to get deeper, we may well find new sites, new areas that obviously been completely covered, which obviously the elites have no idea where they are, but we find them and maybe get more involved with forensic science. So we may well start to get some evidence of the ET from there. So coming back to the Achilles heel, one thing I think they've kept from 13,000 years ago is their mode of transport to move from the planet. In other words, they kept their UFOs, and obviously they fly them around from time to time just to obviously maintain them and to check them and so on. So this is where I think we're seeing, this is where the UFOs are coming from. They're basically still tools that are used by the elites, and of course it's the Achilles heel because they can't get rid of them, and because they'll potentially need them. Maybe the orbit that was there 13,000 years ago, it's a massive orbit, it came close to Earth 13,000 years ago, it's swinging around, maybe it's coming back towards Earth in the near future. We could quite clearly see the elites are not interested in humanity, they're not interested in our planet. And I'll come on to that in a moment. So you're finding that what they're doing in terms of well, just the number of flights that we see every day, thousands of flights every day, and happen to be flying in the ozone layer beneath the stratosphere. And the ozone layer is obviously a layer that protects us from the ultraviolet sun rays, and yet we continue to have thousands and thousands of flights per day. And I was reading an article where Heathrow are talking about increasing to another 25,000 flights next year. We're talking about fuel, high-octane fuel. You take a flight from New York to London, that flight uses the same amount of fuel as an average car driver would use in 12 years. This is his own one flight. And of course, the elites are making huge profit from obviously the sale of the fuel that's used to propel the plane. So again, from the conscious wellness area point of view, we need to look at, do we really need to fly? Because nobody's going to do anything about it. There's not going to be a moratorium like we have with fishing, to stop fishing for a number of year so that stocks can recover, need to stop flying. But this will basically won't happen. So basically, it comes back down to in our own hands as far as we are prepared to make the sacrifice not to go on holiday or use things like Zoom and Skype to communicate in business rather than say, oh, do we need to make this journey? We must really stop flying. That really is it. Because we don't know. We think we touched on earlier, there's forest fires in Australia. There's, there's gases, methane gases from the parade. We're cutting back on all these forests in South America. We kind of almost don't know where this tipping point is. And I remember as a student looking at this thing called Young's Modulus of Elasticity, where we loaded up a wire with weights and it will stretch and you take the weights off and the elasticity will go back. You slowly add weights and it'll revert back. Get to a point where you just add that other little bit of weight and the thing snaps. We have no idea where we are with this in terms of our ozone layer, our stratosphere.
And where's the threshold?
Where's the threshold? And we get some clues. We're seeing, for example, these cancers in Australia, and we're seeing obviously the global warming effect and so on. And again, people will argue, well, this is just normal. It's a sun cycle or weather, may well be, but it doesn't feel normal. And of course, touching on the human and situation, we now have 7.7 million people on the planet. And again, this is just a situation which again is left to evolve. Well, the Chinese did try to do something back a number of years ago, but we are basically doing nothing towards it. And I think again, from the conscious wellness side of it, we need to look at that. Do we need to produce children? And again, I'm really touched on this area that the leads created this life after death situation where there's God and there's heaven and there's the hell and so on. And they basically used this to make large sums of money, particularly back in the Middle Ages through indulgences and so on. And again, if you didn't go along with the teachings, then heresy was not a very good thing to have on your CV. It could be very career shortening, if not life shortening. And many people did die for not kind of going along with this particular situation. So if you, again, adopt maybe a potential idea that there's no life after death, this is it, this is your time on the planet. So again, if you're looking at your financial state, can you afford to have children? Do you want to spend your life and bring up children? That maybe you find at the end they don't like you, you don't like them, but that's a chance you take, of course. And of course, the other area that's coming in now, and many people touch on, is robotics. So how that's going to evolve and change. So you're bringing, again, more people into the world where there's now, the mundane jobs that maybe have been done, which is good they're not doing now, but they find that there's no jobs. So again, these are areas that need to be looked at, because obviously we are billions of people. Elites are only a few. So we don't actually need to tackle them and we need to get involved with them. We just need to basically look at things carefully and think, well, these are just two examples of air travel must curb it somehow, and population.
Did you have some more slides on your PowerPoint presentation that you wanted to show us?
Yeah, I've just a few. Just another area really relating to pyramids and also this knowledge that we are uncovering. You find obelisks are a thing that's not fully understood, and it's something that you look at, they're about 30 odd feet high, but they're carved from one piece of granite. And if you look at the carved, cut from one piece of solid granite, and if you look closely at the symbols, they're beautifully, immaculately cut in a way that seems to indicate to me a sort of almost symbolizing a society where you have the different symbols indicating maybe they were tattooed on particular levels of individuals that obviously the ET had created through Homo sapiens in terms of how they developed. And you find this today. There's an example of a journalist going into NASA and saying to a cleaner who's working there, "Say, well, what do you do here?" And he said, "Well, I helped put a man on the moon." And I think you maybe find that this utopian society existed where everybody worked together in this very peaceful manner. Again, seemed to be again speculation, but looks as though there might be something in that. The other key thing is we're finding that again we are creating USB pen drives and DVD discs and so on, which is stored lots of information. Are these devices that are holding information? Are again thousands and thousands of stored circles that are produced have been discovered around the world. Well, they're basically information storage devices, and you find that. Of course,
I think rocks that have crystals in it also can hold information.
Yeah. And basically, you just think, well, without the computer, without the DVD player, these objects are just an inanimate object, as we're seeing with potentially the stone circles and obelisks. Because there's no means, there's no way that we have of finding out if there is information at the moment. Again, as I said, we are slowly uncovering information, and as I mentioned in the book, I talk about genius and a chapter on genius and how we got this, as I say, amazing inventions that occur. But throughout, every generation throws up people of extra unusual ability, and I think genius can come about through drug taking, fasting.
Altered states of consciousness.
Yeah, and but even bereavement has been known to find be able to penetrate into the penetrate into this kind of really this unconscious part, as I said mentioned earlier, in our kind of operating system. What intrigues me again, mentioning in the book, is that. Finding at the embryo stage, where maybe synapse is not connecting normally with the neurons and the dendrites, that you're finding a child is born quite different, almost a different species to the rest of us. And there's an example of a chap called Stephen Wiltshire who they flew him over Tokyo in a helicopter, and about 2 days later he produced a 10-meter by 2-meter mural of the landscape, almost exactly right. And then you've got people like Mozart and so on. Oh, by the way, Stephen Wiltshire, who was diagnosed autistic at the age of 3. And if you look at these other amazing people like Mozart and Leonardo da Vinci and Einstein and so on, you find they are autistic or somewhere along the Asperger scale. And this gives this, so they're somehow able to again get into knowledge, information that is there within in us all, but they, because of this problem with the embryo stage, they are actually able to access this particular.
John, we have about 3 minutes left, so I just want to make sure you get any additional information there. You haven't had a chance to share.
So I'm just. Finalizing on that, so you're finding it where you've got companies like Intel doubling the size of number of processors on the silicon chip to whatever, it's only a billion on it now. Now the software guys are using this extra power and speed, and this is where these guys come in. I've met many of them. They won't mind me saying that they've got no social skills. They don't know how to maybe tie their shoelaces and so on, but they can look at code. You can hack into computer software, but they're producing and developing amazing amounts of software. So these are, again, very, very unusual people that we kind of called Jesus. The other area, as I mentioned, is imagination, and is imagination more important than knowledge? And we've seen the science fiction writers over the years, like H.G. Wells, Arthur C. Clarke, and so on, Gene Roddenberry, who are predicting things which science fiction becomes science fact. So again, it's just something in our imagination that we're imagining. But the future, we can convert that again through the knowledge we have hidden in our memory, in our unconscious memory, into fact. And so the idea that we can move into space, into, you know, head to the moon, head to Mars, and so on, it's just not. It's just completely possible.
I just wanted to share with our guests that we're speaking to you directly from the UK, so for you it is actually almost 2 o'clock in the morning, and also the background image that you have there is a sort of a special effect from Zoom, but at certain points it distorts the shape of your head. So that's not, it's not because John is an alien. It's the special effect of the back screen that's causing his top of his head to look a little unusual at moments. So maybe it's a good time to share your website and any other coordinates or events coming up.
Well, I think I may just really a conclusion. Really, I just think it's important that we realize that elites exist, and it's important that we need to take control of things to save humanity. It's up to us to save humanity and to save our wonderful planet. Because if we're left under the power and the control of the elites, then we can see, I mean, we know bunkers are built underneath every country for the VIPs and so on, but if the solar rays get through the ozone layer, then that won't count for anything. You say, well, what about the police? Well, I mentioned earlier, they can quite easily escape through maybe an orbit. As I mentioned here, this called a wormhole, if you've got this, maybe get to reflecting on that, you see it.
Yeah, we can see it.
Yeah. And there's a distance, of course, you can bend the two points over and join them together. And again, elites would have that knowledge, mathematical knowledge, to know how to calculate how they can escape from the planet, because they're the wherewithal in terms of UFOs. So we have to just recognize that where are we in terms of, you know, our... green, you know, there's a huge movement now in terms of people are realizing the effect of what's happening. So, yes, I think the message that I have from realizationism has to become as powerful as Darwinism or creationism, or has to develop and really we need to be really aware that we need. It's now. We have to look at it now. It's no good to look at future generations. I think we have to look at it now and work out. And as I said right at the beginning, we're all very clever. Humans are clever. And we're very resourceful. And I'm sure once we realize what's going on, we will actually do something.
Well, let's share your website, Silbury Dawning. That's again, Silbury, dawning.com. Any other coordinates you wish to share?
No, I think there's a forum on there, which again, so it gets open and closed time to time because obviously sometimes it attracts. But there's lots of really good information on the forum, which is worth looking at.
Any events coming up?
At the moment, there's a potential talk again in a few months' time. Looking again at maybe presenting at the Glastonbury Symposium, and there's all sorts of other things that are occurring. But at the moment,
we're actually completely out of time, John. So sorry for cutting you there. I got a few seconds to close the show. So thanks a lot for coming on. Much appreciated all your hard work as a researcher and an author. And we invite people to go and look at your website. And hopefully we'll have you on again sometime in the future. We wish you all the best with your mission. And may the divine forces assist you.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Take care. Take care. So next week, ladies and gentlemen, we have an interview with Carmela Tunzi. You can find her website, mindflowhypnosis.com. We would like to thank our show technician, Donald Newsom, and our show sponsor, Communion Marketing Communications, wellness marketing experts and strategic marketing planning, website design, directory specialist, new revenue specialist for websites. Visit their site at communionmarketing.com. If you'd like to sponsor the show or advertise during the show and get great exposure within the wellness community, please contact us for information on our packages. If you wish to be interviewed, you can contact me on 514-798-2737. That's in Canada. And you can email me at raymond at bbsradio.com or on Skype. Username Raymond Morris. May the grace and the blessings of the divine creator be bestowed upon each and every one of you. Your host from the heart, Raymond Morris.